Imagine your company's email server just goes down right now, not just for a minute, but permanently.
Oh, that's a nightmare scenario.
Right. Every single client contract, every internal HR dispute, compliance records, financial audit trails, just gone in a matter of seconds. For most companies relying on, legacy infrastructure, that is the ultimate single point of failure. It's exactly what keeps IT directors awake at night.
It really is. I mean, email is foundational, right? But historically, the infrastructure behind it is, well, it's incredibly fragile. You set it up, you cross your fingers, and you basically try not to touch anything so the whole delicate system doesn't just collapse under its own weight.
Exactly. And because it's so terrifying to manage, organizations usually feel trapped. They look at their infrastructure and think, their only safe option is to pay an absolute fortune for expensive proprietary tools.
Oh, yeah, the massive vendor ecosystems.
Right, like Microsoft Exchange or Google Workspace. But here's the thing, those ecosystems can actually be replaced by incredibly powerful open source solutions. And we're talking about a truly staggering difference in cost, which perfectly highlights the focus of today's deep dive, supported by SafeServer.
And that cost difference is huge, but I mean, it goes way beyond just the IT budget. When you're dealing with corporate or institutional email, you're navigating a total minefield of legal, regulatory, and compliance requirements.
Oh, absolutely. Strict email retention laws, GDPR, securing financial records, and, maintaining those critical audit trails.
Right, which means data sovereignty is paramount. You can't just throw your company's most sensitive communications into some massive tech giant's mystery cloud and just hope for the best. You need to know exactly where your data lives, who holds the keys, and who actually has access to it.
Which is exactly where SafeServer comes in. They help organizations find and implement the right open source solution for their specific needs.
Yeah.
And they do it all from the initial consulting phase to figure out what you actually need, all the way through to operating the software on highly secure German servers.
Yeah, it's a complete pipeline for taking back control.
Exactly. So if you're an organization looking to take back control of your infrastructure, you can find more information at safeserver.de.
It's the perfect context for what we're exploring today, too, because we are looking at a system that completely shatters the traditional way we think about hosting email.
We really are. So welcome everyone to today's deep dive. We have a genuinely fascinating stack of sources in front of us today. The official GitHub repository, which is currently boasting over 2,100 stars, alongside the official documentation for an open source project called Wild Duck.
It's a fantastic project to dig into.
Yeah, and our mission today is to give you, even if you're a total beginner to server architecture, a clear, easy entry point into what an opinionated email server is and how Wild Duck fundamentally reimagines the back end of your inbox. So, okay, let's unpack this, starting with that specific word, opinionated.
That's a great place to start because it dictates, well, everything about how this software works. In software development, when a tool is described as opinionated, it means the creators have made very specific, rigid design choices for you.
Like they're not giving you a blank canvas.
Right, exactly. Instead of giving a system administrator a million different ways to configure something, the developers are basically saying, look, this is the best way to do it. We built it to work exactly this way. And if you want to use our tool, you play by our rules.
And Wild Duck's specific rulebook is incredibly straightforward. According to the documentation, it explicitly tries to follow Gmail's product design. It says right there in the repository. If there's a decision to be made about how a feature should work, the answer is usually to just do whatever Gmail has done.
Which is, I mean, it's a bold strategy, but mathematically, it's a brilliant one. Gmail completely revolutionized how we handle massive scale in email. And Wild Duck, which, by the way, was created by Zone Media OU as part of the Zone Mail Suite, is built with that exact same philosophy. It's designed to be a highly scalable, no SPOF mail server for IMAP and POP3.
Okay, I'm going to pause you right there for the beginners listening.
Yeah.
What exactly is a no SPOF architecture?
Ah, right. Good
Yeah.
catch. So it stands for no single point of failure. In traditional IT, if your one primary mail server goes down, like maybe the hard drive fries or the motherboard fails, your whole company's email just stops working.
Total blackout.
Exactly. A no SPOF architecture means redundancy is built into the very core of the design. There is no single machine that can bring the whole thing down. If a piece of the system crashes, another identical piece instantly takes over, and the end user who's just typing out an email never even notices the hiccup.
Wow, okay. So who is this actually for? Because looking through the documentation, they have a pretty blunt disclaimer. It says if you're running a small setup where everything fits onto a single server, you really shouldn't use Wild Duck.
Yeah, they don't sugarcoat it.
They don't. They actually recommend you stick to the industry standard for small setups, which is a combination of software called PostFix and Dovecot.
That's right. Because Wild Duck is explicitly designed for massive, large-scale setups. We're talking about organizations with 1,000 or more email accounts dealing with just gargantuan storage quotas. It's designed to scale horizontally.
Meaning instead of buying one giant server, you just link up a bunch of small ones.
Exactly. Instead of buying one bigger, more expensive server, you just keep plugging in lots of cheaper, smaller servers side by side to handle the increased load.
Okay, so the way I'm picturing this, and tell me if this analogy tracks, is that a traditional small email server setup like PostFix and Dovecot is like a local mom-and-pop post office.
Okay, I like that.
Right. It's incredibly reliable, the postmaster knows where every single letter is, and it's perfect for a small town.
Huh.
But Wild Duck is like a massive, fully automated international shipping hub. It is total overkill if you just want to send a postcard to your neighbor.
Oh, absolutely.
But if you're processing millions of packages a day, you absolutely need that relentless robotic automation.
That is a highly accurate way to visualize it. I mean, the local post office works beautifully right up until you suddenly have 10,000 people trying to drop off packages at the exact same millisecond. When that happens, the walls of the post office quite literally burst.
Right. And that leads me to my biggest question. I really want to push back on this a bit. We've sunk decades perfecting traditional file-based email servers. If it's meant to handle Gmail levels of scale, how does it physically store all those messages without crashing?
It's the multi-million dollar question.
Because moving an entire enterprise's email away from traditional storage seems incredibly risky. Why reinvent the wheel here?
Because at a certain scale, the wheel breaks. What's fascinating here is that Wild Duck completely throws away the traditional rulebook for how an email server stores data. It totally abandons the file system.
Wait, no file system at all?
None.
So where are the emails actually going?
They go directly into a database. Let's look at the mechanism of why traditional servers fail at scale, right? In a standard setup, every single email you receive is saved as a tiny individual file on a server's hard drive.
Okay.
If you have a company with 1 million emails, you have 1 million tiny files. Hard drives are not designed to read 1 million tiny files simultaneously. It takes a massive toll on the system's index to search through them, read them, manage them. The hard drive literally spends all its time spinning around looking for tiny fragments of data.
Which I think is called disk thrashing, right?
Exactly, disk thrashing. It kills performance. Instead, Wild Duck stores absolutely everything in a distributed database, specifically a sharded and replicated MongoDB cluster.
Hold on. Isn't migrating an entire enterprise's email over to a MongoDB database a massive paradigm shift? I mean, people usually use NoSQL databases for, like, fast web apps, not for critical corporate communications.
It is a massive shift, yeah. But it solves the disk thrashing problem perfectly. When we say the database is sharded, imagine you have a massive, heavy encyclopedia.
Okay.
Instead of making one person carry the whole thing, sharding slices that encyclopedia into 100 smaller chapters and hands them out to 100 different people. Slicing the database into smaller, manageable chunks across different servers means no single machine ever gets overwhelmed.
Oh, I see. Okay, so instead of 1 million separate files sitting in messy folders on a hard drive, your inbox is actually just a highly organized series of entries in a massive high-speed database.
Exactly. And the magic really happens in how the server talks to that database. All the application servers, the machines that actually answer your phone when it checks for new mail, are what we call stateless.
Wait, stateless? Does that mean the server literally forgets who I am the second after it hands me my email? Like, so it doesn't get bogged down holding on to my connection.
That is exactly what it means. It holds no personal data. It doesn't remember what you did 5 seconds ago. These stateless servers just sit behind a TCP load balancer.
So the load balancer is like the traffic cop.
Yes. Think of it as a hyper-efficient traffic cop at a very busy intersection. When you open your email app, the traffic cop looks at 50 different Wild Duck servers, finds the one that's currently the least busy, and directs your request there.
And then what happens?
That server instantly grabs your specific data from the sharded MongoDB database, hands it to you, and immediately forgets about you so it can serve the next person. That mechanism is how you get horizontal scalability and completely eliminate the single point of failure.
That is incredibly clever. But the sources also mention this specific storage trick they use for attachments, which I thought was the biggest aha moment in the entire documentation, especially from a financial perspective.
Oh, the database splitting. Yes, this is a profound advantage for organizations trying to manage costs.
Let's actually do the math on this, because attachments, you know, heavy PDF reports, massive video files, or high-res images take up a ton of space. WildDuck's database fundamentally separates the attachments from the text of the email.
Right.
So imagine a company has 10,000 employees, and over the years, they each accumulate 10 gigabytes of old attachments. That is 100 terabytes of data. Paying for 100 terabytes of ultra-fast, enterprise-grade SSD storage would completely bankrupt an IT department.
It would be astronomically expensive. Just unfeasible.
Right. But with WildDuck, you can store those 100 terabytes of heavy attachments on large, cheap, spinning SATA hard drives while keeping the actual text of the messages on much smaller, blazing-fast SSD drives.
Yeah, the cost savings there are ridiculous.
So when a user searches their inbox for a specific phrase from a contract, the system searches the lightning-fast SSDs and returns the result instantly. But it's not wasting expensive high-speed storage on a 10-megabyte PowerPoint presentation from 3 years ago. That's not just a neat tech trick. That is a massive financial loophole.
It's a level of granular resource management that traditional setups struggle to achieve without incredibly complex workarounds. You're getting SSD search speeds for pennies on the dollar. But if we follow this logic, ripping out the file system actually creates a new problem.
Exactly. Okay, so you've ripped out the file system to save storage and increase speed. But by doing that, you've also ripped out the traditional configuration files that IT guys rely on.
Yeah.
Wait, no config files and no file system. How do you even control it?
You don't use config files at all.
Because if I think about traditional IT, configuring a server means opening up a terminal window, digging into a complicated text file, changing a few lines of code, and just praying you didn't miss a comma and break the whole server.
Oh yeah, we've all been there. But not here. Here's where it gets really interesting. Everything, literally everything, is controlled via a REST API.
I want to make sure we visualize this correctly for everyone, because a lot of people throw around the term API. Configuring a traditional server with text files is like going into a busy restaurant kitchen and trying to cook the meal yourself, right? You have to touch the raw ingredients, navigate the hot stoves, and hope you don't burn the place down. But using a REST API is like sitting at your table and giving a highly specific order to a waiter. You just pass a standard formatted request, and the kitchen handles the messy reality of executing it behind closed doors.
That is the perfect analogy. It's clean machine-to-machine communication. You send an HTTP request, just like loading a web page, and the database updates instantly. And because it's an API, it means developers can write their own custom scripts or graphical interfaces to manage the server programmatically.
Which means no one is ever typing raw code into a live server environment.
Exactly. And think about what API-first control allows for at scale. If we connect this to the bigger picture, you have instant granular management over mail account settings, server-side filtering, auto replies, even complex cryptographic setups like DKIM.
DKIM, that's domain keys identified mail, right? Okay. Basically, the digital wax seal on your envelope that proves your server actually sent the email and isn't a spammer.
Spot on. In a traditional setup, configuring DKIM is a nightmare of text files and key generations. Here, you just send an API request and the system handles the cryptographic generation internally.
And it also changes the experience for the end user, doesn't it? The sources highlight that their demo webmail application is blazing fast, but, you know, every company claims their software is fast. What is the actual mechanism making it faster here?
It comes down to bypassing the translation overhead. Think about a traditional desktop mail client, like when you buy a new laptop and set up Microsoft Outlook.
Oh, it takes 20 minutes just to download the headers and sync thousands of old emails. You just sit there staring at a progress bar.
Exactly. That happens because the server and the client have to talk using IMAP, and the server has to parse MIME data. MME is the old, heavy formatting language that emails are sent in.
Oh, right.
It tells the computer what is text, what is HTML, what's an attachment. Translating all of that takes processing power and time. But the WildDuck webmail is a modern Node.js application that just uses the REST API to talk directly to the database. It doesn't use IMAP at all.
So it's loading pre-parsed data straight from MongoDB.
Precisely. It essentially bypasses the heavy lifting entirely. Instead of syncing files, it's querying a database, which allows the inbox to load as instantly as a Netflix catalog. You open the app, the database returns the specific text you need in milliseconds, and the UI renders it.
Okay, so we have this system that operates like a high-speed database, controlled entirely by modern web APIs, routing traffic dynamically, saving money on storage. I mean, it sounds incredible. But my immediate thought, and I'm sure the thought of any IT director listening to this, is about security. If everything is controlled by a web API and all of a company's sensitive data is stored in a giant database instead of isolated files, isn't that a massive target? Is this actually secure?
Those are the exact right questions to ask, especially when moving away from battle-tested legacy software. But the developers behind Wild Duck built security in at the foundational level, largely by removing the vectors that hackers usually exploit. First off, the entire application is written in Node.js, which is a memory-safe language.
Let's clarify what that means for a beginner. A lot of legacy software is written in older languages, like C, right?
Yes, and older languages like C are vulnerable to what we call buffer overflows.
Right, which is basically like trying to pour a gallon of water into a pint glass. The extra water spills over onto the table. In a computer, if a hacker sends too much data to a memory space that can't hold it, the extra data spills over into other parts of the system's memory, allowing the hacker to overwrite the actual instructions the computer is running.
Exactly. Memory-safe languages like Node.js automatically manage that glass. If you try to pour a gallon in, the language safely stops it from spilling over. But the security goes much deeper than just the programming language. Let's look at how taking away the file system fundamentally breaks a hacker's standard playbook.
Because there's no hard drive for them to access.
Essentially, yes. Because of its architecture, Wild Duck requires absolutely no root privileges to run. It doesn't touch the server's local file system, and it doesn't run any shell commands.
That's wild.
It is. Think about a traditional hack. A bad actor finds a vulnerability, and their very next step is usually to drop a malicious executable file, a payload, onto the server's hard drive to establish a backdoor.
But if they compromise a Wild Duck application server, the application functionally doesn't have a hard drive.
Exactly. The hacker gets in and finds themselves in an empty, stateless room. They wouldn't find a traditional file system to exploit. They can't save a payload because the server forgets everything instantly. And they wouldn't have the permissions to run operating system commands anyway. It neutralizes entire categories of cyber attacks.
That is a massive relief for system administrators.
Yeah.
But what about user-level protections?
Yeah.
Because the server itself might be an impenetrable fortress. But users are, well, notorious for having terrible passwords or getting phished.
True. And they've accounted for the human element, too. Wild Duck has built-in support for application-specific passwords.
Oh, I love those. That's when you generate a unique, random 16-character password just for your phone's email app.
Right? Exactly.
That way, you don't have to put your actual main account password into a third-party device. If your phone gets stolen, you just revoke that one specific password without changing your main login.
It isolates the risk perfectly. Furthermore, it fully supports multi-factor authentication natively at the database level. This includes both TOTC, which are those rolling six-digit codes generated by an app on your phone, and U2F hardware security keys, like a physical YubiKey you plug into your laptop.
So it's fully up to modern standards.
Oh, completely. It also features strict automatic rate limiting to prevent brute force password guessing attacks. But here is the ultimate fail-safe for the highly privacy-conscious users can even set a GPG public key in their settings, and Wild Duck will automatically encrypt their stored emails the moment they arrive.
Wow, wait. So if they set a GPG key, the server encrypts the message before saving it to MongoDB. Which means even if a highly sophisticated hacker somehow stole a copy of the raw database itself, all they would see is encrypted gibberish.
Nothing but gibberish.
They couldn't read a single email without the user's private key, which the server doesn't even have.
Precisely. It operates on a zero-knowledge principle for those specific emails.
There's one more feature I want to highlight from the sources, because it anchors this highly advanced tech back to a very basic human level. And frankly, it shocked me that this is still an issue today. Wild Duck takes a Unicode-first approach.
Yes, the character support.
Yeah. The documentation specifically cites a fully valid email address hosted right now on their instance. It's entirely in the Cyrillic script. It reads, It's just surprising to me that in modern times, non-Latin characters in email addresses or folder names still cause so many older systems to completely break down.
It's a remnant of how incredibly old email protocols actually are. I mean, they were originally designed in the 1970s and 80s strictly for the English alphabet and basic ASCII characters. While extensions have been bolted on over the decades, many legacy servers still struggle with full Unicode support.
They just panic if they see an emoji.
Pretty much. They throw errors if a folder name has an emoji, or if an email address uses Arabic, Japanese, or Cyrillic characters. Wild Duck, being built from the ground up for the modern web, supports all Unicode extensions perfectly at the database level, whether it's the email address itself, the folder names, or the complex message headers.
So what does this all mean? Let's step back and look at it. We have an incredibly scalable, opinionated email server. It operates like a high-speed database, routing traffic dynamically through stateless nodes.
Yep.
It saves a fortune by splitting heavy attachments onto cheap hard drives. It natively speaks modern web protocols via an API, supports global alphabets flawlessly, and completely locks down security by removing file system access entirely.
This raises an important question, though. How can organizations practically take back control of their data without sacrificing that enterprise-level performance? What we see here is the immense value of open-source tools. Wild Duck is licensed under the EUPL 1.2, the European Union Public License. It's bringing the kind of scaling and security architecture that was previously only available to the massive tech giants and handing it directly to independent organizations without forcing them to rely on proprietary platforms.
It's democratizing the infrastructure.
Yeah.
Which brings us perfectly back to the core use case that SafeServer focuses on. Because when an organization, whether it's a mid-sized business, a massive association, or any group dealing with thousands of users, realizes they don't have to be locked into an expensive proprietary ecosystem from Google or Microsoft, everything changes.
They gain massive cost savings, certainly, especially with the hardware efficiencies we discussed. But more importantly, they gain granular control over their own infrastructure and achieve strict data sovereignty.
Exactly.
They know exactly where their data is stored, exactly how it's being handled, and exactly how it's secured against modern threats.
And navigating that transition doesn't have to be an overwhelming process. That's why SafeServer can be commissioned for specialized consulting. They help you look at your current setup and figure out if a highly scalable, opinionated solution like Wild Duck is the right fit for your organization, or if a comparable open source alternative makes more sense for your specific compliance and operational needs.
They really take the guesswork out of it.
They guide you from that first fundamental question all the way to secure everyday operation on German servers. You can learn how to make the switch and take back your sovereignty at safeserver.de.
It really is about rethinking what is possible with the tools we use every single day.
It is. Which leaves me with one final provocative thought for you to mull over. We started this deep dive by comparing legacy email to a fragile digital filing cabinet. But if tools like Wild Duck are successfully turning the inbox into a blazing fast API-driven NoSQL database, what entirely new types of applications or automated workflows could we build on top of our email in the future? Once we stop treating email like a dusty filing cabinet and start treating it like a high-speed programmable data stream, becomes possible next.